quorum, and at this point, our quorum is two, because we...
Would be all four, but voting would be...
Voting, yeah. So, establish quorum.
Stuart Martinez, present.
Tony Brees, present.
Matt Grider, present.
Dennis Scott, present. Pledge of Allegiance. And Terry, how about you?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we'll start off public comments. Any public comments? Not yet? Okay, great. Number five is a approval of August 9th city council minutes. I need a motion.
I motion that we approve the city council minutes from August 9th.
Second.
First and second, and all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Unanimously passed. Okay, and then we're going to get into resolution number 2017-12. A resolution of the City of Lapine authorizing wilderness garbage and recycling service to increase its solid waste collection service rates.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to excuse myself from the table.
Okay.
And become a citizen.
Okay.
Sounds great.
So this is...
So if you have questions, you probably ask.
Yeah, you put it on a different hat.
Okay, Corey's going to explain this.
So this is a fairly straightforward resolution. It piggybacks off the resolution that was passed in 2010, which is what allowed Wilderness Garbage, the company that the city has a franchise agreement with for garbage and recycling services within the city, to raise its rates. And so the city received a letter on July 25th, 2017, that Wilderness Garbage would like to raise their rates. And per the franchise agreement between the city and Wilderness Garbage that was passed back in 2007 as the city's ordinance 2007-3, which upon receiving the letter and now reviewing all of the city's franchise agreements, realized that that franchise agreement has expired. So we are working with Wilderness Garbage on putting together an updated version of the franchise agreement. That will probably be in front of council, I could say next month's work session, September 25th. It might fall into October. Regardless, in conversations with Jeremy, understanding and again reading here the first two whereases, which acknowledges the franchise agreement and then also acknowledges that during the negotiations, so in this interim period, franchisee Wilderness Garbage will continue to provide solid waste management services subject to and in accordance with the terms and conditions of the franchise agreement. What this resolution does is allows them to raise rates effective October 1. In the franchise agreement, it requires 60 days notice. It's received on July 27th, so call that essentially October 1 by the time that will play out. And it also requires Wilderness Garbage to, on the top of the last page, excuse me, the second page, to notify customers in writing that their rates will increase, providing at least a month notice before that rate increase is effective. Questions?
Let's just say that this is overdue. I mean, should have been done.
The updating the franchise agreement?
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like Wilderness Garbage came on their own to do this. We had to, I mean, it was overdue. And they aren't asking for all the, you know, reimbursements from the past that they didn't.
This just deals with the one specified rate increase that's in Exhibit A, the letter's Exhibit A, and the rate increase is Exhibit B. And so, I believe if any of you have questions for a representative from Wilderness Garbage, there's one in the audience tonight, if you have any questions about that. But all this resolution does is enacts the same rate fee that I've been told they've already gotten approved in unincorporated Deschutes County. There are other service areas, so they just want this to be in line with all their customers they serve.
Corey?
Yes.
Did
I gave them that additional handout that came in after.
Yeah, so on your table, there was one more section to the rate increase. It was, it's rates for, is that for commercial? Is that commercial rates? Yeah, commercial rates. So
containers.
Yeah, larger containers. So it's both of those will be part of this resolution. And what was included originally, this is the residential collection rates.
Okay, any questions, Tom?
Which should actually be Exhibit B, continued instead of Exhibit A.
We can change that.
The only thing I would have to say is I don't think it's up to Wilderness Garbage to come in and tell us that they want to renew it. It's up to the city to tell them you're out of date, you need to renew.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with renewal, other than acknowledging.
But I need the changes. If you're saying that the resolution wasn't in effect, isn't that what you said?
There are two separate things. There's the franchise agreement between the city and Wilderness Garbage.
Right.
Within that franchise agreement, the only way that Wilderness Garbage can raise rates is via council resolution. And so that's what this is a resolution under that franchising agreement umbrella. What we realized, the city, is that the franchise agreement expired, I think probably a year ago, and so we need to renew that, and we're in conversations and process of renewing that, and that will be a process and a discussion item for a future council meeting.
That's exactly what I said. I said it wasn't up to Wilderness Garbage to come to us. It's up to us when we find that it's...
It's up to them to come to us when they want to raise their rates.
Right, but correct. Not when they're out of date on their agreement.
Correct. That makes sense.
So I don't have any specific questions about Wilderness Garbage's franchise agreement or rate increase. I think it's a do. But I am curious if in reviewing franchise agreements there were others that were expired.
None that I saw.
Okay.
I also haven't gotten through all of them. And we also received a letter recently that Crestview Cable is being sold to Bend Broadband.
Right.
So we had a franchise agreement with Crestview Cable, and so that will kind of evolve as well. And I'll keep all of you informed as we move forward on that. But we've been working internally on a spreadsheet that tracks essentially every contract we have, when it was approved, when it expires, and we're doing that with franchise agreements. We're doing that with other items that we need to be monitoring, not only throughout the year, but throughout the years, so that this doesn't happen.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, back to this resolution. I need a motion to accept this resolution.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve resolution number 2017-12, a resolution of the City of Lapine authorizing Wilderness Garbage and Recycling Service to increase its solid waste collection service rates.
A second.
First and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Passed unanimously. And this is where we'll say, we have now three members, only three voting council members, so two's a majority. So we didn't need Karen for this one. And she's resigning. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Okay, so it passed. Anything else on this meeting? If not, I have a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion that we adjourn the meeting.
Second.
First and second, and this part of the meeting adjourned. We'll get Stu back up to the table and might as well continue immediately. No breaks.
Take a piece of it.
Yeah.
And tell Don and Matt.
That was a tough pass.
Okay.
Well.
Around.
Okay. All right. That was a quick. This is call to order the City of Lapine work session at 5:39, the 23rd of August 2017. Call to order.
Stu Martinez present.
Connie Breeze present.
Don Greiner present.
Dennis Scott present. Added agenda items, Corey, do you have any?
Yeah, we'll add one, title sponsorship for the SLED luncheon.
Do we also need to add the discussion on Karen?
Yeah, let's do that. Add the second added item. Everybody in favor of adding that one? We're going to discuss our council member that resigned. Okay? Okay, let's move on. Discussion on time, place, and manner. TBM regulations for marijuana recreational retailers.
All right.
Let's get into see what's going on this.
So this is going to be a bit of a free-flowing discussion, but I'd like to say a few things beforehand, which really is that we adopted in October of 2016, so it really has almost been a year, we adopted a time, place, manner restrictions on marijuana producers, processors, wholesalers, laboratories, and retailers. I would say that the topic of tonight is really focused on the retail component of the time, place, manner restrictions. And since I think it was probably around the beginning of July is when the first retail shop had their OLCC approval, they had the city approval, and they were open for business. And so the city's been able to go through our process of abiding by the TPM, and staff has some recommendations for things that could be considered to change. I know I've heard in other conversations in previous meetings of the council having some potential items to revisit. We're joined by one of the retail business owners here tonight. I think maybe the other one's on their way. And so they may have some comments on this as well. And then we have Larry Brown and is it Laura Shepherd?
Yes.
Are in attendance as well. And I've done walkthroughs with Larry. He's an investigator. So he goes on site and walks through the checklists that I included in your packet for retail operations, making sure that they're following all of the OLCC rules. And then Laura, you're the regional manager, is that correct? Okay, great. And so invited them to be here so that if questions come up about how the city's time, place, manner regulations contrast, either exceed or are less than what OLCC requires, how do those two work in tandem to accomplish what we want?
Is there a specific time, place, and manner items that they want changed? Or are we just going to go through all of them?
We're not going to go through all of them. I'd like to step through a few items. We can start with the ones that I have in mind, or I know maybe other council members have some items as well. Or we can, at some point, I think opening it up to some comment from the public would be good if either the business owners want to make some comments. So we can step through that in any order. However, council.
Let this gentleman and tell us what they think of these.
I mean, dollars.
That's what they're.
Yeah, can I speak?
I mean, that's why we're changing them, is mostly at their request.
Not necessarily.
No, there's parts that city staff thinks we need to change as well.
Right.
Let's can we start with that?
Yeah, let's start with that.
We'll get a little bit of input from Larry and Laura
too.
As well.
Let's just get some order.
Do you two mind coming up to the table? Maybe you can come. Sure. Come join. And I'll draw your attention to Section 7, which is the section on background checks. So, and then if any of you have questions for them just in general as well, I know they didn't have to make a presentation or hit any specific points, just be here for general questions. So, Section 7 on background checks, what it follows is Section 6.20 on workers' permits. And what that section says is that all employees who perform work on behalf of an Oregon Liquor Control Commission licensed marijuana producer, processor, wholesaler, and/or retailer, including without limitation the licensees working in a licensed business or managing information in the cannabis tracking system, must possess a marijuana worker permit. Then, Section 7, I won't read all of it, but essentially what it requires the city to do is to run background checks and make sure that no person who has financial interest, is a company principal, employee, or volunteer, has any history of felony convictions in Oregon, and will inform the city whether all persons named in the permit passes the Oregon background checks. So they have to get a marijuana workers permit through OLCC to be an employee or to own a business. But then the city, we require also an extra layer of background checks that we have to conduct in order for them to get the approval to be an employee or to own or run that business. And so in conversations with OLCC, with Larry in particular, you know, what we've discovered is that that is, in staff's opinion, a bit redundant. And if you could articulate, you know, kind of the what the process of obtaining a marijuana workers permit requires, and if someone shows us a certified marijuana workers permit from OLCC, what does that mean? What can we trust and say, okay, they're showing us that, we know in good faith that they've met a certain threshold?
So what our process is, they have to go in and apply, provide us all their kind of pertinent information. They have to take an online class. If you're ever taking like your ATV class or your boaters class online, it's something similar to that. And then we run a background check. There's very specific things in our rules that we look for in the background checks. Mostly what we're looking for is felonies related to either drugs or violence or deception and dishonesty. So there may be other felonies out there or other crimes that might be in the background that we don't consider. We can only consider what's in the rule. And I have a copy of that if you guys want a copy of that. You know, so that's kind of what we look at. They're good for 5 years. Unlike if you've had a liquor service permit, these, if you're a worker and you have your permit, if you get arrested or convicted of a felony, they have to notify us. So lots of times with the alcohol ones, you know, they get their permit, you know, if they got convicted of a crime the next day, they would disqualify them. We might not know for 5 years because their permits are good for 5 years. In this case, if they got convicted a month later, they have to notify us within 10 days, and then we would reassess whether they were qualified for their permit.
Okay. Every phase of this, I want council to be able to ask any questions they want. So just instead of going around the table, let's just ask them.
Yeah, jump in if you have questions.
Yeah. So what do you think about the city having to do background checks?
You know, I leave that up to you. You guys may be more stringent than we are, you know. And that would be completely up to you guys. The one thing I would say, that if you guys are more stringent, we're not going to enforce that. We will only enforce our rules.
Right.
You know, so, you know, we may give Laura a server or a worker's permit, you know, and if she's working, you know, that would be fine with us. If you guys have more stringent rules and you guys say she can't work, that's kind of up to you guys to enforce. That wouldn't be up to us. You know, so that's kind of up to your community standards. And
that's the question, essentially, is the OLCC threshold enough, or is the extra layer that we have in place currently by these rules, is that something we want to maintain and continue? I think there's a few different ways to look at it, and you know, one would be staff time and efficiency of running the extra background check and reviewing for those items, and then I think it would be a council question whether those items should preclude someone or prohibit someone from being able to work in a marijuana business inside the city of Lapine. So that's one item that I think we need to consider.
We need some comments from you guys.
Well, I don't see any reason to do a second background check. I think that if in this particular case, if OLCC's rules, you know, on the permits, that they check them, that's fine.
I feel the same way. We can't enforce some of our ordinances we have now. So if we can't enforce them, why add another one that we're not going to be able to enforce?
No brainer. I mean, it's another layer that business, small business, doesn't need. And the city, yeah, if they're meeting the state's requirements under OLCC, the licensing agency, then that should be good enough for the city. So, yeah.
And I'd have to agree. We don't want another enforcement layer in the city, and they can handle it.
So let me throw one more thing out. So
yeah.
Normally, when our process originally started, you had to have your permit in hand, and it had to go through that whole process before you were allowed to work. We're currently about 2 months behind in getting service permits just because of the large number of applications we've got in. So until the end of the year, we're allowing people to work who have only applied and haven't had their background check done. Eventually, the goal is to have it, so get back to the point where we have to have the approval and have it in hand. So what that means is for until the end of the year, you may have people working that have not had their background completed yet.
So end of the year, December 31?
Yes.
Okay.
Of this year.
Of this year.
Non-issue.
But the people that are working at the dispensaries now, you've already done their background checks.
So every employee or principal or volunteer or person of financial interest at either recreational or retailer location right now should have a valid marijuana workers permit and have gone through a background check process through the city. That's correct. So thinking about, you know, obviously the feedback I just heard on the city background check process, that makes looking at Section 7 pretty easy in terms of looking at marijuana workers permits. Section 6.20, it does still say all employees who perform work on behalf of an Oregon Liquor Control Commission licensed marijuana must possess a marijuana worker permit. So we would have to amend that language, or staff would have to look the other way, I guess. And so I would definitely want there to be some communication. Or do you have is there a way to verify it with you, Larry, or with OLCC of, you know, these people are in the process of getting their marijuana workers permit, so then they're allowed to work, but then what if they don't actually obtain their marijuana workers permit? Then the employer has to fire them?
Yeah, so then we would deny their permit, uh-huh. And they would not be allowed to work after the point we denied it.
Okay.
So the other thing is, it kind of sounds like your rules go a little bit further than our workers permit rules go regarding who has to have them. So basically, for us, it's anybody that ever is going to touch the marijuana. So the bookkeeper doesn't have to, you know, if one of the owners that we have here tonight, if they're not hands-on, they're just kind of the financially interested person.
Interesting.
We don't require them to have one.
Okay.
Pretty much the workers' permits for anybody that's ever going to touch the marijuana in any way.
And what's like the associate, so obviously we know it's taking some time to get the marijuana's workers permit, you have to go through the class, you got to do the background check. What's the associated fee?
And it's $100 for 5 years.
$100 for 5 years. So if we maintain the language we have now, we would say that the way it is now is all employees must get a marijuana workers permit, which is more than what OLCC requires.
Yes.
But if we get rid of our own background check process, we would need to have that in there, because that would assure that every person, every employee has gotten a background check prior to working in the business. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does make sense. I mean, I understand what.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, if we strike Section 7 and keep Section 6.20, that's what it means. So.
Well,
I would revise that 6.2 as well.
We'll let them talk.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jake.
You don't get a whole
exactly.
But well, it doesn't make. As I'm thinking through, you know, I mean, if I didn't do my own books in my business, and I sent them out to a bookkeeper, and a bookkeeper had to do my books, and I'm going to require her to have a background check. I mean,
yeah.
Granted, it'd be nice to know if she's a felon or not, or he. But as a business owner, I don't see the and not only that, there's silent partners that really what grounds.
So you're saying to just change the wording somewhat in it, and just have it on behalf of the liquor board.
Yes.
Following
the rules
of the OLCC.
For us to stay out of it.
Yep. For that part, yeah.
Okay. I agree.
So all employees must have a marijuana workers permit through OLCC.
Right.
Okay. So above and beyond what OLCC requires.
No. We're saying go with what OLCC is requiring.
So only the people who
only
touch the marijuana.
Only the people touching the marijuana.
Right. And I can get a copy of our statute for you that describes who has to have it.
Okay.
So the other thing is, you know, like we wouldn't require somebody with a financial interest to have a worker's permit,
mm-hmm.
but when they went through the licensing process, they've gone through a background check for us because they have a financial interest in the business.
So there's a different component that verifies
that they have an appropriate background.
Yeah. Well, and that's then the principles of the business.
Yeah, the principles.
They would be background check for that process. So when someone applies to the city for a recreational marijuana business permit, they need to, the main thing they need to show us is the license that they have through OLCC.
From this guy, yeah.
And so then with that license, there would be a list of names that OLCC reviewed.
Yeah, that we have, yeah.
So how would we know, though, that somebody was in the process of, and then you rejected them? Do you notify the cities in that case? That's not something I'm assuming you guys
so
are doing.
So we rejected them, they would not get a license.
Right.
Or that person would have to be removed from having a financial interest or, you know, being a member in the business.
Right.
You're talking about a worker?
I'm talking about a worker that you guys are in the process of processing their application right now, and then they get denied.
The
How would we as the
yeah.
city know that?
Would
we wouldn't.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So why would we? I mean, we can't enforce it.
From an enforcement
But you guys are
Larry,
enforcing
Larry
that.
Larry would go in
but,
and say, okay.
Yeah, right.
This
so,
person
I mean,
shouldn't be here, and we would take administrative action.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Maybe you guys, I mean, after the end of this year, you know, they will have those in hand if somebody from you guys want to go down and see them or you want to make the licensee come in and, you know, show you a copy of everybody that works there.
And you make checks. I mean, I'm sure you stop in and make checks.
We're kind of short-handed, but
yeah.
eventually
that's the real world.
Oh,
there you
go.
You know, so if there's somebody working there that doesn't have it, you'll
Hopefully
know.
We'll eventually catch
you'll
them
know.
Out.
So,
yeah.
I agree with the council here that let's just change it, change the wording, and leave
so
it up to the.
I had a voicemail when I got back to the office today of someone who wants to work but doesn't have their marijuana worker's permit right now. Based on the amendments that we're talking about potentially making, say next month, if we can get it turned around in that time, then the council's saying they'd be okay with allowing that person to work.
Well, the council wouldn't have any. It would be OLCC.
We're saying follow OLCC's rules on that.
It's all
so and their enforcement on that.
Yes.
And then it's not in our hands to enforce that either.
So we don't require anyone to have a marijuana's worker's permit.
We require them to follow OLCC's rules.
Then I say we just do a sentence that says that instead of what 6.20 says.
Just the first sentence of that, leaving out it's all controlled by the Liquor Control Commission.
Okay.
The city has nothing to do with it.
Except we issue a recreational marijuana business permit.
Business permit.
Which,
not workers' permit.
And we have to review all of these provisions and pages subject before we issue these 8 pages before we issue that permit. So take out the marijuana workers permit component and just say all, leave it to OLCC. Just, okay, that's
yep.
fine.
So the answer to your email would be checklist to OLCC and see if you have a permit. If you've got that or permits underway and they approve it, they can go to work.
Okay.
Isn't
that what you would do? If they have applied
and
you agreed to let them go to work, they could go to work.
Yep. Yeah.
So all we need to tell him is talk to you.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We don't need to be in the enforcement of any of this.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
Does council agree on that one?
Yes.
This is just the first item, I think.
Corey, but he's thinking through the rest of them.
Yeah.
That was the main one that we've had to try kind of work through a little bit. Because I don't think it was thought through very well. I don't think we knew how it was going to quite work in practice. And that's what we're kind of learning and why we're having this conversation.
Well, everybody's been changing their rules for quite some time. So, is there anything else that the staff sees a concern about?
The other component that I did actually want to raise, because I had another voicemail just in the last day of someone inquiring about using a church facility as a potential daycare facility. And take the church facility out of it, just say a building as a daycare facility. So someone could, you know, there's a vacant space, someone wants to open a licensed or certified child care facility. I'm looking at the top of page 5, which is the beginning of section 6.9, which is the section of the time, place, manner that talks about business location. So that's the section that talks about they cannot be within, retailers cannot be within 1,000 feet of public or private elementary, secondary, or career schools, cannot be within 750 feet of real property comprising a public library, within 500 feet of real property comprising a licensed or certified child care facility, within 1,000 feet of another retailer, or in any area or zone not expressly permitted by the city's land use code, which we've had those conversations as well. So I think the question mark on that section in my mind is that you pretty well know where an elementary school is. It's not moving overnight or in the course of a month. Same with a public library. And if someone's, you know, if a business is open, a retailer is invested and open, you know, they've established a spot for the business. If they've set up shop there, what happens if then someone who wants to provide child care services wants to move to a building within the 500 feet radius? How does that work?
I think they would be denied.
That's right.
Well, the child care facility would be denied?
Yeah, because the other businesses are already established.
Well, so the way it reads is that each retailer must not be located. So that's a question I can ask legal counsel, but I feel like it would be, it's a little bit of a contradiction there. So go ahead.
If I know what's set up right now, a city has approved a certain business in a certain place, and I want to move a business into that area that actually would have not been allowed had I not moved in after the business was there. I think it's up to the people that's opening the business to be aware of it and make necessary either go to a different location or make necessary adjustments that they can open there. But it's up to the people that have their children attend there, and it's up to the people who want to run the business there.
So does council care if there's a child care?
It's out of compliance right there. It
would make them out of compliance.
Yeah, so you couldn't let a daycare facility move in. You'd have to tell them no, because there's already a marijuana facility going on.
Is there an OLCC requirement regarding, is that language somewhere in OLCC?
We don't consider child care, but if we move this to, say, a kindergarten.
Okay.
So if you had your retail store and a kindergarten moved in next door, we would grandfather in the retail store, and so they would be allowed to be there since they were licensed there first.
Okay.
So. Yeah.
So do we care about, okay, so what, I think what, this rule then in effect is good in the sense that if you have a daycare facility or a child care facility, a retailer can't move within 500 feet of that, but if a retailer exists and a child care facility moves in within that 500 feet, they can coexist within 500 feet of each other. Like the kindergarten and the retailer could coexist within 500 feet.
Yeah, that's how the state would look at it.
Yeah, so we wouldn't prohibit a child care facility from moving within 500 feet of the retailer. The retailer just wouldn't be required to move. Does that make sense?
That's exactly how I feel.
Okay,
then it would be up to the child care center whether they wanted to or not.
Exactly.
And so, sure. Yes.
If they did, it should be, they should be, I don't know where you would cover that, to be able to tell their clients that bring their kids there that there is a marijuana facility within
due diligence.
So many feet. Yeah. I mean, it's just.
Okay.
They have that.
Yeah.
You couldn't ask the retailer to move.
No, right. No way. That's crazy.
But or you tell the child care facility that they can't.
Well, you could require them to post on their premises that there is a facility within a certain distance from them. I mean, that way any parent that comes in and wants to use their facility, they know that there is this facility close by, and if they elect not to use it, then they don't. If they elect to use it, then that's up to them.
When they come in for their business license, they should be informed that, okay, there's this facility within 1,000.
Exactly.
And that's about all you need to do.
Okay, so like just a courtesy heads up, we don't need to put in here that we require them to publish a notice?
No.
Okay. Okay, I just want to talk through that scenario because actually I'd wondered about it, and in the original medical time, place, manner we put in place, childcare wasn't included, partly because of, you know, that nature that it could move and a new one could open. And so interesting to hear how the state deals with it in regards mm-hmm. to kindergarten. I think that's the right approach we should take in right. regards to the child care. So,
yeah.
Okay, that's the other one I wanted to talk through and get some clarity.
And that's all the city would like to change as far as staff.
So we're not, yeah, so basically based on what we just talked through, we wouldn't change any of the language that's in there.
That
it's just the interpretation and enforcement of that okay. provision. So.
Okay, let's move on to the public.
Sure.
Since they're here. And since we have this
Public comment.
Say your name.
Yeah, so my name is Don Huff, owner of Green Knox Dispensary here in Lapine. So we're talking about the time, place, and manner. And so my concern would be the time. If we could open on Sundays and also stay open later during the week, say like 9 to 9, I think the city could benefit by more tax money. We could provide more jobs to people here in Lapine. During the winters here, the roads are pretty nasty. People have to drive to Bend to get their cannabis. And
so it's basically Sundays and extending the hours till 9.
Yeah,
is what you're recommending.
Like
okay. What are the? Well, does OLCC have restrictions on hours of operation?
7 to 10 or?
Yeah, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days a week.
7 to 10. Okay.
Yeah.
I would agree with Don completely. Maybe even just let OLCC handle that. There again, we don't need to add layers to this thing. OLCC's got this covered. They've been working on this for a long time. They've winged out all the little bad parts of it. 7 to 10 o'clock is not unreasonable.
And as far as Sundays.
Yeah, we don't distinguish days.
Don't distinguish days.
7 to 10.
Every day is the same.
And it's 7
not
to 10?
Like
what?
7 to 10?
Yeah, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Okay, council, comments on this one?
Well, I've already shared many times my opinion on that. I have no problem extending it 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday. But as a sworn in counselor, one of the things I'm required to do is protect our small town feel, and I don't think that they need to be open on Sundays.
It's hard for me. We let every other business open on Sunday. When I was a kid, everybody closed on Sunday.
Liquor stores aren't open on Sundays either.
Neither the grocery stores. When I was a kid, everybody closed on Sunday. It was everything closed. And I still like that idea, but by the same token, you can't expect to penalize one business when you allow a competing business or a similar business to stay open. It just isn't fair, in my opinion.
So
hard for me to say. I don't like it on Sunday in a way, and another way, I think it's unfair if we don't do it.
So you'd go along with them being open on Sundays?
I want to hear what everybody else says.
We're not making, as a reminder, we're not making any decisions.
No, this
tonight.
Is just
we're
a just discussion and guidelines. And
this is helpful for staff direction to then go and revise this document, and then we'll have to come back to council.
Because this one won't be decided tonight, I'm sure.
Well, I really feel that they should be open on Sunday. I don't like the idea, but I think that it's only fair for them to be.
One other thing that I'd like to add is just during the winter, with the roads being so nasty, I think it's unfair to send our locals to Bend. And I was here last Sunday when we were closed. I was at the store, and I've seen quite a few people come to the store, and unfortunately, we couldn't open, so they had to leave.
Okay.
I've got to go.
Yep, that's okay.
Back to the store.
So. I was going to cut you off anyways. Cause
thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thank you.
57 days a year that we're talking about, and it makes an impact.
Oh, hold
you guys
on.
Are taxing us 3%. Let's have Sundays.
Sure.
I mean, I just don't understand.
Let's hear other
well,
council.
If you had your choice, what would you rather have, Sunday or 10?
Sunday.
Not both. Which would you rather have?
That's a good question. 10, because I like my Sundays off. I wouldn't be down there, but someone would be there.
And that's kind of the way I run my business, is everyone needs a day off.
For sure.
And Sunday seems to be the day off. And not just because it's Sunday, but it's a break before Monday. And if I thought OLCC liquor stores were closed on Sundays.
No, they're not.
Liquors? Ours are.
Just ours is.
Ours is.
Really? It could be. We allow them to be open.
That's a choice.
Oh, okay.
For some reason, I thought it was only the grocery store liquor stores that were open on Sunday.
Well, I know Amity, theirs is closed on Sunday. It's closed on
Sunday. They may just choose to do it.
So they must choose to do it.
Well, and Monmouth used to be a completely dry town.
Well, Monmouth used to, oh God, I hated that place.
I'll bet the OLCC office is closed on Sunday.
Okay.
Most of the time. Most of the time.
Not always.
But I would tend to lean towards 7 to 10. I mean, that's a reasonable time. But still stay with the closed Sunday.
I'll go along with that.
You know, I think 10 o'clock, especially in the summertime and wintertime, like you mentioned, the roads and everything. And so that would be my suggestion.
So first of all, it's totally agreed upon 7 to 10.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, so as far as these places are, it's changed to 7 to 10. Oh, okay, I'm sorry, Trent.
It's Trenton. Sorry, I couldn't help it.
We have this connection now. Don't disrupt him.
Yeah, I agree with the 7 to 10. I think that's fair for them to keep that open until that late. And then with the Sundays, like you said, a lot of businesses do stay closed on Sunday. And even though it's another layer, I think it's reasonable to keep Sundays as, like, they can't open on Sundays. I mean, it matches our liquor, so I think it should kind of have some barrier there.
Okay, I think everybody agrees at 7 to 10.
That's what we'll put in the revised version, and then it'll be back.
And it sounds like most everybody agrees no Sundays. This isn't to say this can't be brought up in the future. And that's just to give staff guidelines to go on here. I mean, it's not the final decision.
Just real quick on another item that I noticed that I forgot to circle and highlight. It's essentially in conjunction with what we were talking about. The first item, it's 6.13 on page 5. It's the criminal conviction section. And this is, I know, more stringent than OLCC. If what I heard on the first item's discussion was to leave it to OLCC. I think what I'm hearing would be to strike this, which basically reads that a person who has been convicted of any state, in any state for any felony, including a variety of things, may not be a company principal, employee, and or volunteer of the business or have a financial interest in the business operated in the city's incorporated limits. So that's more stringent than OLCC. And
well, first of all, you wouldn't even know this because you're not going background checks.
Yeah, so there'd be no way to even know that.
So I'm just drawing out another point that's omitted.
Yeah.
Mine. Yeah. Just making sure. Keep me on my toes.
Okay. If there's nothing else.
There is.
Go ahead.
So, in talking to both businesses in the past, and I'm not sure if it's in the TPMs or where it's at, but when they were medical, they had to have a separating barrier between coming in the door and keeping product out of the window. And now that they're retail, what are your requirements on any of that?
So we don't have any requirements on it. That was a Board of Health Authority, the medical side, that was one of their requirements. That you couldn't see the stuff from the outside, you had to have a waiting room, and then the product was in a separate room. So we don't have any requirements related to, you know, now they can have the jars in the window as long as they're secure. And they can have clear front windows. We have no requirements to talk about that.
So both of the places that I visited said they intended to keep it that way, that you couldn't see the product from the window.
I'd love to open up the deal if I could. However, I built the wall and put a buzzer door in, and now it's like I'm not going to spend the money to tear it down.
So when I spoke with Don prior, he said the same thing, that he had no intentions of displaying it, and that's something that I feel that I'd like to keep as something in RTPMs for Lapine for any future businesses, and since both of them said that they had no problem with that, existing businesses that they didn't, that I'd like to see that, because Don's right next to a dance studio, you know, there's a dance studio in there. If a daycare does move in, you know, near High Desert, then...
What if we made sure that the windows were blocked?
Opaque, I'd be good with that. Some way that the product's not displayed in the windows, or opaque windows, something to that effect.
Where is that located?
It's not in here.
It's,
we would have to ask.
But it was something that was in place when it was medical, but I spoke with both of them about when
so
I was...
So we could add that in here.
I don't think we should add that. I think we should let it stay just like the OLC regulations are. And anybody that wants to convert it, they can convert it. Or if they want to keep it as it is, they can. Or if in the future somebody else comes in and buys the business and they want it to haul in one way, I think they should be allowed to do it.
The only, and I usually I would probably agree with that, Don, but the other businesses were made, and I know it's changed since they went into operation, but it's almost you're almost penalizing them for something that was out of their control. So I don't know.
Well, it won't be out of their control if it was
right.
Changed. They have the option of going either way. And right now, if I have a medical marijuana card, you honor it as a medical marijuana card, don't you?
Yes,
and price it accordingly. And if I want recreational, I come in and you charge me recreational prices and give me a choice of what I want. So actually, it won't change as far as their operation because they can go either way.
No, but they aren't able to display it the same as a new business would be able to display
right.
it.
Right. So right now we have a check-in room where you show us your card, but in actuality, we have opened the door, and now people can just walk through the front door and walk through the buzzer door to get to our retail space. You can't really see it from the window. Maybe if you looked around, you might be able to do it, but there again, I'd opaque my windows. Not a huge
so kind of your business saying you don't want to be seen from the window.
Exactly. I think, and that comes to protecting our kids and keeping it out of their sight, and especially with edibles now and everything. It's just, I think that, like I said, there's a dance studio right next to Green Knots, and you got your little ones running and around, and they're curious about it, and why can't they have that candy? And you know,
I guess my opinion on it is that most stores have a pile of beer sitting in the front window. I guess I compare it to alcohol, you know. I know this is new, but you know, you could have all your alcohol you want sitting in the window being advertised.
But it doesn't look like brownies and candy.
That's true.
there is a difference. And we educate a lot more with that too. Hopefully that's gonna change with some of the tax money.
Did you want to do all these at one time? I'm sure.
Would I ask
you
a question?
When we go,
what's that?
If it was changed, and sometime in the future you wanted to remodel your building, would it make a difference? Or would you never want to change it?
Well, like I said, I would love to bring that wall down. I just don't want to do it because I don't want to spend the money. If in the near future I did decide to do it and there was the rule in effect, I would just opaque the windows. However, yes, I think you should have it like a liquor store style where you walk in and visibly see everything.
Once you're in. Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So it's another layer. It's work on you guys.
Just to clarify, so I understand, so what you're saying is you are okay with your opinion is you're okay with the opaquing of the window.
For sure.
So if we didn't pass that rule, you'd be okay with a competitor or someone else putting jars in the windows, or wouldn't be okay well, with that.
I don't think that would happen, but yeah, it's
okay.
You know,
you never know what might happen.
Yeah,
that would be, I would think, a business concern is if it's almost like, you know, an established dispensary and then the daycare moving in, you know, you can't force them to move. Well, this is another new business coming in, but now they can display everything in the window, where these folks couldn't.
Right.
Just put everything in the window. Let me just clarify that. It's more of not have a check-in room.
That's
blocked.
Right. That's the thing I'm talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly.
Right.
Let's hear what a young person thinks
about this. Real quick, just to also, when I discussed this with Don, he's the one that brought it to my attention and said that he thought it should be there. So it was actually his opinion that because it was changed and there are kids, he says he has kids peering in the windows, and so I think his are okay.
His are okay.
Yeah, so he had his done already.
But we aren't talking just these two. We're talking
No, but in the future, someone else could be here, and I'm just saying that if they're
there
willing to...
There should be something like that. What do you think?
Yeah, from outside in, seeing it is, we don't want to promote that, so we don't want it in the windows visible for all the kids to see for a daycare or something like that. But if you're inside of the marijuana business already, I think you should be able to see it. Like, I think that's, you're already in there. Like, you know what's in there if you're in there, and if you don't, you probably shouldn't be there.
Can we ask other places are, other cities, other...
So I know the city of Bend has kind of the opaque window in their time, place, and manners. You know, so if you guys wanted to look at one, that might be a place to look. Beyond that, I don't know who does and doesn't. So it's, again, that's one of those rules that I don't enforce. So I don't care, but I kind of don't care.
My opinion is opaque windows. And once you get inside, you can display whatever you want.
And that's if you don't have a check-in room, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. You can walk in and just, it's there.
Yeah. I think unless you tear down that wall, you don't have to opaque your windows.
Right, yeah.